Welcome back, friends. Welcome, welcome. It's the Buffer Podcast. It's so good to be back with you. It's Friday, April 23rd when this is releasing. My name is Tony Tone.
Joel Krausar.
And we have a lot to unpack on the show today. Since it is Friday, April 23rd, when this is being released, my hope is that at this point, you've either watched or you're starting to watch the new Mortal Kombat movie on HBO Max and episode 6, the last episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier on Disney Plus. Both, I know for sure Falcon and the Winter Soldier has been really good. Full disclosure, we haven't watched either yet because we're recording this on Thursday evening. So whether you needed to know that or not, we're sharing, and we're both definitely going to watch both of those releases. And Joel, I think, I don't know, did you get caught up on Falcon and Winter Soldier yet?
Yeah, I'm all caught up. It took a darker turn than I was anticipating that taking with the Wyatt Russell character, the U.S. agent. I'm still kind of lost on the whole power broker discussion, and I know that there's lots of information out there on what is what. It was great to see Julia Louis-Dreyfus make an appearance a few episodes back, and I'm kind of curious to see how they wrap this thing up here in the final episode.
Yeah, and I don't know for sure, but it seems like maybe it was, I don't want to say it was cut short by COVID, but 6 episodes just doesn't seem like a lot. But it, all signs are pointing to Sam becoming the next Captain America. And it, you know, early indications are that that suit that Bucky gave him from Wakanda is going to be pretty cool. It's one of those things, like they've released some preview toys. And if you look at those, you kind of have an idea. But I didn't want to spoil it for myself, so I didn't. But nevertheless, looking forward to watching it. And who knows, maybe Mortal Kombat and or Falcon and Winter Soldier will show up in next week's Buffer Podcast.
I loved the meme I saw on Twitter a couple days ago, which was it was Falcon, it was Sam Wilson opening up his case, and inside the case were the Buzz Lightyear wings, and then the next frame over was Bucky opening up his case, and it was a Buzz Lightyear arm. As that was the new suit.
So
it was great. Clever use of inter IP crossover property there by Disney. I thought that was some funniness on the interwebs. Well,
they own everything, and although I don't know, and Joel's going to give us a little bit, if this is your first time listening to the Buffer, Joel's going to give us a little bit of a breakdown on how it works. But what I was going to say is I don't believe either pieces of content entering the Buffer battle today are Disney properties. I don't think so, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, neither one of these are Disney properties, which is kind of good. I mean, one was a Netflix original property, and the other one was, which we can talk about in more detail. And what we do every week on this show, if you're new to the show, and thank you for joining us, remember to like and subscribe and rate and review and wherever you get your podcasts. We pit two pieces of similar content, whether it's movies or TV shows, documentaries. Last week we litigated Disney Plus 90s content. Today we are going to be discussing both, which are kind of action movies. They have casts that have a lot of similar DNA career-wise, but these are two very different movies, but have enough similarities that we thought they were worth pitting up face to face in a new released action movie. One is trending on Netflix, and that will be the one that I'm presenting, and we'll keep that one a little bit of a surprise. I guess if you read the description, you probably know what we're talking about by now. But Tony, I'll let you lead the way with yours.
Yeah, so I'm really excited for a couple of reasons. The movie that I've selected, you can watch both in theaters, and Joel and I hope that you'll support your local theaters wherever you find yourself.
Which
it's how about, safe to go back to the theaters.
How about our local theater flexing today on which is the 22nd of April, Earth Day, flexing about the solar panels that they installed a few years ago and putting out that the absurd number of CO2 emissions that they've helped reduce by putting that solar panel in. Our local theater here in Muscatine, the Palms 10, not just providing great entertainment, but working hard to protect the environment as well.
Yeah, such a great idea if you think about it. Movie theaters looking at solar tech, I think is very smart. So I'm excited to talk to y'all about the movie Nobody, which I don't know if it's the first time that Bob Odenkirk plays kind of a BA tough guy, but it is really good. And what I was going to say is you can watch Nobody, the name of the movie, came out last week. You can watch that in your local theaters or you can stream it online. So they wanted to get it out. They, I believe, went into production on that in 2018. And are giving you a couple of different options on how you can consume Nobody. So Bob Odenkirk, just to give you a little bit of a synopsis, and I will say that I will probably end up spoiling the movie. So spoiler alert if you haven't seen Nobody. Bob Odenkirk plays a character by the name of Hutch Mansell, who is by all accounts a true nobody. The movie starts with him going through his routine on a daily basis, and he's getting up, he's going to work. He seems to be consistently late for getting the garbage to the curb for the garbage pickup. And he just looks like he's stuck in his own personal Groundhog's Day of just life in your mid to late 40s. That is until a home invasion happens at their house. And when he had an opportunity to take out one of the burglars, Hutch chose not to, which was much to the dismay of his son. But then we quickly find out that Hutch Mansell had a different side of him. And he worked in some capacity for the government, and he was known as a nobody. So all of a sudden, Odenkirk's character on a dime flips into this total tough guy, Liam Neeson from Taken times two, and he just goes on a vengeance spree trying to find the people that broke into his house, and then he gets involved with a little bit of the Russian mob, and Nobody is fantastic. Connie Nielsen's there, Christopher Lloyd's there, there's a couple, I believe, Russian actors whose names I can't pronounce, but I'll tell you this, if you haven't seen Nobody and you love John Wick, it's from the same writer as John Wick, that's Derek Kolstad, you're going to enjoy Nobody. The thing that I'll say, Joel, and it's kind of a running theme for me on the Buffer podcast, I was left wanting more. This movie clocks in at like an hour and 40, and I was like, give me 30 more minutes of Hutch knocking people around because I like that character.
Well, I think that people in the editing bays more and more as they know that part of the audience and the reach of this is not captive. They're sitting in their homes. It's I think that the long movie is something we're not going to see as much now because they don't want people to lose attention and lose focus and start and stop too much, or they have to build it in a way that if they are going to do that, they don't completely lose track of what's going on so that they do come back to it.
And I also think that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that every action movie needs to be 2.5 hours long or some long drawn out thing. I mean, essentially, you're getting like a little bit of a plot, a backstory, and then a lot of ass kicking, pardon my French. But what was great is how convincing Odenkirk was as both Hutch Mansell, father of two, who's just living life. We all can get, you know, kind of stuck in that routine of waking up and you're dropping toys and you're late to get the garbage can out and he's doing his routine. But then the way that Odenkirk is able, because he does go through this transformation, and it's like it's as if this nobody was just kind of laying dormant until he needed to access it or summon it. And the way that he goes from just this convincing you know, Joe Schmo into this total BA. It was really convincing, and Odenkirk was in great shape. It was so good for me as a giant Back to the Future fan. Christopher Lloyd plays Bob Odenkirk's dad, who's also, by the way, a retired FBI agent. And at one point, Chris Lloyd is just blasting people in half with a 12-gauge shotgun. I told you I was going to spoil it. And the great thing about Nobody, and this hasn't been confirmed yet, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a Nobody Part 2, because it's been so well received. Hutch makes it to the end. And I think, like John Wick, people were pleasantly surprised at how much. I mean, how many John Wicks have we had now? Three.
And they're all excellent.
Are they doing a four? They're all great. And I think people also like the character that they can kind of identify with. Because I'll be honest, there's parts of the beginning of Nobody that I'm like, holy crap, that's kind of me. Like I said, we can all get stuck in our routines, and that's fine. I'm not knocking the regular 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 or whatever. But then to see Hutch go on that journey was so rewarding. And there's just this sequence, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, Joel, but there's this fight sequence on a city bus that is unbelievable. Oh my gosh. It's worth it, whether you see it in theaters or you watch it at home. Nobody is, if I may, for everybody.
It's really good. I have seen it.
Not for kids. Don't let your kids see it. Don't let your kids see Nobody. Unless you're my dad and it's 1991. Other than that, don't let your kids see Nobody. It's not a kid's movie.
No, not at all. And what I enjoyed is I saw it after I'd heard a couple of interviews with Bob Odenkirk on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend and on the Smart List podcast. Those are just two podcasts I visit regularly, and he had been on them. And the fact that it's rooted in a very personal story for Bob Odenkirk, that he has been victim of a couple different home invasions, one that was pretty intense where he was held at gunpoint when he was living in Chicago. And so you could tell watching it that this was, I think, a lot of fun for him. And I think we saw a side of him as an actor, because he's really, you know, kind of the goofy, you know, he's the goofy lawyer and You Better Call Saul, and he's the character actor in so many other movies. I think this is the first thing movie wise that I've seen him step out and really be the lead. And he's such a brilliant writer and a brilliant mind that you could see it was an easy transition for him.
Definitely. And I'm here to tell you, again, I don't want Bob Odenkirk's family to get burglared again. But I think if it happened, he's kicking ass and taking names, because you're right. He has lived through it. It's got to be a traumatic event. He said that it's kind of scarred his family. So he definitely could pull from that motivation. But if you're listening and you're thinking about breaking into the Odenkirk house,
Just don't break into any houses. No break-ins.
Yes. Yes. That's a buffer public service announcement. Avoid getting arrested at all costs.
Well, just don't commit crimes so you don't aren't at risk of getting arrested.
And also don't commit crimes. All right. So I don't even know like what you have picked out that can even hold its own against Nobody. But I'm so excited for you to try and plead your case, if you'll have it.
Okay. So I was looking, because we decided we wanted it to be new content for this week, something that's come out within the last few weeks, if not recent 10 days. And so I went to the trusty Netflix trending screen on my handy dandy smart TV. And what was trending at number 2 behind Baker and the Beauty, which I chose not to watch, forgive me.
Was it Cocomelon?
It was not a Cocomelon. That was number 4, I think. Okay. It was the Academy Award nominated Octavia Spencer and an Academy Award nominated Melissa McCarthy in the Juggernaut superhero film Thunder Force.
Yes. I feel like before you take over, I just want to say it's hard for me to not like anything that Melissa McCarthy does. It's gonna be tough for me to be critical of this movie. I have watched it, and I love Octavia Spencer, but I'm gonna defer the floor to you and Thunder Force.
So everything about this movie should be wrong, and it should be bad, and it shouldn't be watchable. I'm just gonna be honest. But then you start watching the opening credits, and it's written by Ben Falcone and directed by Ben Falcone, who is Melissa McCarthy's husband, and he's got a track record. He directed Tammy. He was one of her cast partners at Second City. So that he goes way back into their life, you know, together before they were married. And I think that was the reason why I also picked this, is knowing that you were doing Nobody. The Second City in Chicago ties between Bob Odenkirk and Melissa McCarthy. I mean, Melissa McCarthy, I know, was considered to be the next Chris Farley coming out of Second City, as far as just that that amazing character who could play, you know, Blue, who could be, you know, this disgusting, you know, farting, burping, almost fraternity brother stereotype, you know, as a female, but then also is like super vulnerable and super relatable, and you find ways that you really just fall in love with the person. Melissa McCarthy was always kind of described as that. And Odenkirk was one of the primary writers for Chris Farley. He was a huge influence in that generation of Second City. And then here comes this next wave of Melissa McCarthy. And I think Fred Armisen was also there at the same time. And just that wave of Second City. So there's so much connective tissue between Odenkirk and McCarthy, because they are tight. They have a background in improv together. And so when I started looking at the cast, Melissa McCarthy, Jason Bateman, Octavia Spencer, Bobby Cannavale, like, there are just home run hitters all throughout this cast. And I think that the text that I sent to you earlier was that this movie shouldn't be good. The premise is a little off the wall. Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy are childhood friends. Octavia Spencer's, you know, this whiz kid, kind of wunderkind brain. Her parents are scientists. Her parents pass away before they're able to complete their life's work. Octavia Spencer then takes it upon herself to be really driven, you know, and pick up the family mantle, while Melissa McCarthy is kind of, we'll just say she's not an achiever. We'll just put it that way. And they're not as close of friends as they are. They have a riff that takes them apart. However, on the eve of one of their high school reunions, Melissa McCarthy shows up at the mega lab for Octavia Spencer's company, a private company, to try to take her to her party. And the bad guys in this are what they call the miscreants, which they're like superhumans or metahumans who are terrorizing the city of Chicago. And they try to kill Bobby Cannavale, who's a mayoral candidate. And again, spoilers. I'm sorry, I kind of started this before I said spoiler alert. And
well, I think you're okay.
There's not a lot that's coming in that movie that you don't see coming from a mile away. And that's totally
exactly.
Okay. But the Melissa McCarthy, long story short, ends up with superpowers from a lab. She's not supposed to touch something in the lab. She thinks she's turning on a dimmer switch, and she's really turning on the injection chair that that injects her with a serum that gives her super strength. And then Octavia Spencer was going to use that injection on herself so she could become a superhero. And they had another super serum that was going to provide invisibility. So Octavia Spencer takes the invisibility serum, and so they become the Thunder Force, where they are a buddy superhero duo, where one has super strength and the other is invisible, and they work together to stop the miscreants. And it turns out Bobby Cannavale is actually behind the miscreants and the leader of the miscreants, and he is one himself. And Jason Bateman plays kind of another right-hand man, or I should say right claw man, because the superpower that Jason Bateman has in this movie is he has crab arms. He has pincers for arms.
As you would.
There is a love scene between Jason Bateman and Melissa McCarthy in this movie that involves some really creative choreography and Old Bay seasoning. That's all I will. That's all I will say about that.
I was gonna say, are there? Because the writing, when you talk about the combination of husband and wife, you know, Ben Falcone and Melissa McCarthy, you feel like it's kind of formulaic in that I look at these two as like they're checking off boxes. I really like Tammy. That came out in 2014. It was kind of like a little, I don't want to say a character study because that's not what it is. But if you look at the canon, the McCarthy Falcone canon, you've got Tammy, where Melissa McCarthy gets to kind of dive in a little bit on the character. Then they do The Boss, Life of the Party, The Happy Time Murders, which involves Muppets, that's which I'm good. All in on.
I watched that a few weeks ago, actually.
It's not good. Super Intelligence, which admittedly I have not seen, that was released in 2020. And then Thunder Force. But so you wonder, like, are they, was a spoof superhero? Like, are they, did they just, because they're also kind of in production on something called Margie Claws. So are they just trying to kind of run the gamut of character that's funny but a little bit heartstring, the wacky boss role, the party movie, the Muppet movie, the Super Intelligence kind of feeler, even though I don't really know the premise of that. Here's your Thunder Force. It's a play on how ridiculous superhero movies are. I just was left feeling like Melissa McCarthy is funnier than what I saw in Thunder Force. And by the way, you're right, there are those moments, but are there enough of those moments to save Thunder Force?
I don't think so. I think what she is she's Adam Sandler. She's following the Adam Sandler catalog. Have these juggernaut movies early in your career, Bridesmaids, Identity Theft, you know, what was the one with Sandra Bullock? Was it The Heat? Is that what it is? Where
I think you're right. Yeah, that was a good one.
So those are three movies that were box office absolute sensations. Bridesmaids, she got nominated for an Academy Award as Best Supporting Actor in a comedy. She was in a comedy and got a Best Supporting Actor nod. She poops in a sink in that movie and got nominated for an Academy Award, and rightfully so. It's 100%. So I think she's following more the Sandler model, where it's, I'm going to make these movies for other people based off characters and things that I can really play well, make a ton of money off of it. And now I can kind of write my own deal with Netflix and make all of these movies that I kind of just want to make with my friends. Like, you know, you look at the cast of this, you know, she and Bateman works together in Identity Thief. They're close. Bobby Cannavale is married to Rose Byrne, who is her co-star in Bridesmaids. So I'm assuming that through those connections, they're close personally. They're making movies with their friends, which is what ultimately I think is the goal as a comedic actor, is why go through all of the pain? You know, Tammy, I think, is a kind of a parallel to the punch drunk love. Not obviously Ben Falcone, as great as he is, he's not, you know, PTA, but you still have that serious role where you see the person more than just this wacky character, like you saw with Sandler. I think that that's the best comparison, is that she's taking an Adam Sandler approach, where I'm just going to sign a bunch of movies. Let's go film. I'm from Chicago. Let's film a movie in Chicago with my friends. And I go home every night to my husband, who's also been on set with me all day. So after seeing these two movies, I don't know that Thunder Force is going to win as far as our criteria go. But as I was watching this, and I'll also put this into context, I watched this movie at 3 a.m, staying up with a sick dog. So I was sleep deprived and I was stressed, and I needed to laugh. I needed silliness in my world, because I was, you know, 6 feet away from a yellow lab that was puking and pooping its brains out all night. So it was good to be able to just hit pause and not feel like I was going to miss something as I was going outside.
You heard it here first, folks. If you're looking for a movie to put on while tending to sick animals
or sick
Thunder
children,
Thunder Force is for you. I guess my only comment is, and obviously I'm a fan of Melissa McCarthy and a fan of Adam Sandler, but at what point does the gravy train run out when, and again, Thunder Force was released on Netflix. Melissa McCarthy has a great track record of taking these kind of, I don't want to say off the wall comedies, but these smaller budget films like The Heat, I think costs like 40 something million. They turn that into like 230 at the box office. So she certainly has the chops and the legs to stand on. But at what point do these studios start to go, Are we moving on from the Melissa McCarthy thing? I mean, Sandler kind of has like a running deal with Netflix. That doesn't mean that the last Sandler Halloween movie was any good. I guess my point is, like, do you get to a certain point where you're losing sight of what's funny? Because at the point that Ben Falcone and Melissa McCarthy are at, is anybody going to look at them and say, when they say, so what'd you think of Thunder Force? Oh, it was good. You should make the seat. When's the sequel come? I mean, I feel like they need somebody to say, you took some chances, but it's not something I'm going to rewatch, nor am I going to recommend. Is it mindless fodder when your dog's got a case of the Hershey squirts? Potentially.
Well,
but I wouldn't find myself telling people to watch Thunder Force. And when you think about everything that's on Netflix, everything, there's so much. Are you going to say with certainty, you know what, Thunder Force, worth your time? I'm not going to do it.
I think the algorithm is saying that, yeah, people are still going to watch it, because I wouldn't have turned it on if it hadn't been showing trending. Now, I'm not saying that the algorithm is pure, because obviously Netflix has some financial skin in the game, having funded the project, but you could argue that the same thing for a movie like Nobody. Like, my mom probably isn't going to be like, yeah, I can't wait to watch another action movie about a home invasion and a guy who's just a few years younger or a few years older than my son's you know, going out and killing everybody as revenge. But there is definitely a specific audience that does want to see that. And I think what it is these people, they're making movies for their specific audience. I think the people who are watching an Adam Sandler movie, which there are a lot of those people. I mean, I just think like the Sandler movie, The Cobbler was much better than I think I ever anticipated watching it. And I wouldn't have found it if it hadn't just been on Netflix and it said, try this. I think that's where studios like Netflix and, you know, as Amazon's starting to fund more of this original content, I think that they're still going to green light these projects by these established stars like McCarthy and Falcone, that they have enough cachet with the audience that they're going to get their money back at least on it. But I do like, and we can maybe talk about this next week too, like Amazon, they're saying, okay, we're not going to pump money into these projects like Sandler and McCarthy. We're going to pump money into IP like Tom Clancy, and their new one comes out, No Remorse, with Michael B. Jordan next week. So I think that's where you're going to start seeing more of these studios, is they're going to find, okay, what are people coming to us for? People are going to Prime for Jack Ryan, things in that universe. So they're going to put money into that. People are already going to Netflix for things like Sandler and these silly kind of comedies. So they're going to keep that pipeline full. So I think that there's going to be more than we maybe care to admit, you know, being movie people like we are.
Yeah, I think ultimately, a better movie, Nobody, is a better movie, and it's sum total. Now, is it formulaic? Does it live in the same John Wick universe? Yes, of course. But I mean, Thunder Force, it's the same thing, right? My thing is, like, I just want to make sure that, and of course Netflix isn't going to listen to us or Amazon, but
I did get a note. The CEO of Netflix does listen to the podcast, and no, I'm just kidding.
Thank you, Ted Sarandos. I would just say, like, for every automatic yes that you're giving to, or potentially not seeing the light of day, that may have, you know, more meat on the bone. I just, you know, I'm all for uncovering new talent, leaning on people that you can rely on. But I'm here to tell you, I don't know how Thunder Force does at the box office.
It would have been terrible at the box office.
Maybe non-pandemic, it's Melissa McCarthy and it's Octavia Spencer and they're enough of a draw. Probably. It probably does well. But overall, as far as the purposes of the buffer battle, my case is that you could rewatch Nobody. You could tell your friends to watch Nobody. And I would like to see it live to fight another day.
And I think it will. I'm saying yes, it does. I think it you describe it in this way. If my working in my cubicle in my marketing department, if somebody came and said, "What'd you watch last night?" And I said, "I watched Nobody and it was awesome. It was really surprising how good Bob Odenkirk was in this movie." That's how you describe it. If someone says, "What'd you watch last night?" And I say, "I watched Thunder Force and it should not have been as funny as it was, but I laughed hard. There are some moments." If you've got a moment where you just want to be dumb and not think about anything, it's not a bad choice. I think that's how you describe it. I mean, we can nitpick. All right. I mean, cinematically, Thunder Force, not great. But
yeah.
I mean, it's like that Buddy Games that we watched the other day. Like, as a whole, it's not a great movie, but it had one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen. I wish I had thought about the laxative timer when I was in college for a competition. I think it's a brilliant thing from a idiot guys hanging out standpoint.
All right, so Nobody. Congratulations, Bob Odenkirk. You live to see another day in the buffer battle, and you're going to live to see more of this show right after this. Hang on. All right, so it's time for one of our favorite features on the Buffer podcast. It's Buffer Guilty Pleasures.
Yes. Am I starting this week?
Well, I was going to say, I feel like, given that you I know what yours is because you sent me a text and I think my response was, "It's how much?" Yeah, so I want you to start because it's something that I haven't seen in a while, and I'm curious to see if you pulled the trigger on the investment on this guilty pleasure.
So interestingly enough, here's how I got to this. Is I was looking for something funny to watch while I was working on a project. And so I turned on Ted, the Seth MacFarlane, Mark Wahlberg classic.
Of course.
And I was reminded of this movie that was so important of my childhood in the scene where Ted calls Mark Wahlberg to come to the party because Sam Jones is here. And my guilty pleasure is 100% Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon is such a great movie that I will watch anytime it is on. And I sent you that screenshot of, do I pull the trigger? I think it was like $14.99 to buy it because it's not streaming anywhere. And I did not pull the trigger. And here's why. If you go back a few episodes to our Last Chance University interview with Matt Messenger, the former basketball coach at Scottsdale Community College, you learned that Matt is my oldest cousin. Matt and his brother Andy both own Flash Gordon on DVD.
Yes.
And because whenever they view it together. They have agreed and are sending me the extra copy of Flash Gordon on DVD.
No way.
The tradition can live on with my children as it has begun to live on with their children. And this summer we are planning so my family still owns some property out in the country in Western Iowa. We own an apple orchard in the Les Hills, and we go out there for a camping trip every year. We haven't gone the last couple of years because of either scheduling or COVID. And we're going to try to go and have a 10 cousin in our family's reunion, about 45 people. And with generators and movie screens, we're going to have a family viewing of Flash Gordon on our family apple orchard in Northwest Iowa. So Flash Gordon, very much my guilty pleasure. And Sam Jones, just kicking Ming's butt all across the universe. And anytime you can have a Queen theme song as your theme, Flash, I will ride for this movie any day of the week. Flash Gordon, my guilty pleasure.
There's no argument from me, and nor do we have to litigate or battle our guilty pleasures. It's just that. And Flash Gordon is so enjoyable. A little different genre, sort of, for me. And what I'm going to start off with is not the same selection as I made for my guilty pleasure, but I was really excited. I found out last week that this December will mark the 25th anniversary of one of my favorite movies of all time, because I saw it at the right age and I still would say that it holds up. And that's Scream. I can't believe that Scream is going to be 25 years old. I saw Scream in the, and we could do a whole podcast about how I saw Scream.
We should, maybe closer to Halloween. Let's do that. Cause we've talked about that movie a lot.
So Scream turns 25, which means I was 13 when I saw it, and I loved every minute of it. The sequels are kind of hit or miss. There's another one on the way. But my guilty pleasure this week on the Buffer Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, is Scary Movie from the year 2000. Because when you go down the Scream rabbit hole in the 25th anniversary, you can't help but notice that Scary Movie keeps popping up on your Google searches. And I remember seeing Scary Movie when it came out in the year 2000. And I'm not ashamed to admit that I rewatched it just this last week. And I found myself laughing just as hard. I am forever a fan, and I'm not going to sit here and say that Scary Movie is in the same vein or category as like Airplane, but those just kind of fun, goofy, spoof, over the top. I think the first Scary Movie is absolutely hilarious, and they hit on so many cultural nuances, references. If you haven't revisited it in a while, you should. Just the cast alone, Anna Faris obviously is there. Regina Hall is there. Marlon Wayans, Shannon Elizabeth. I'm not ashamed to admit that. And I, by the way, I own Scary Movie on DVD if you need to borrow it or watch it at an apple orchard. First world problems.
No, that one will not be watched at an apple orchard with my four-year-old, five-year-old. Children.
We're going to watch Scary Movie at my pear farm, and we're going to put it on the back of a horse.
So don't make fun of the Glory Land Orchard that is in Northwest Iowa. Pisgah.
Listen,
home of the old home keep on trucking filler upper cafe.
Some of us have apple orchards in our families, and some of us are blue collar. Okay?
First off, that apple orchard is from a very blue collar family, the Messenger Farm family from Northwest Iowa or from Western Iowa.
I'm kidding. County. I think it's awesome. And no, you should not watch Scary Movie with the family. But
the homage to The Exorcist with how a bodily fluid pins somebody to the wall is amazing in that movie.
I just remember laughing so hard in the year 2000 when I was like, 17 years old. So that's my guilty pleasure. I'm not ashamed to admit, Scary Movie. And with that, we go into another feature
One last thing on Scary Movie. And yes. My memory of this movie is so vivid because it was like the first movie I went and saw with my college friends, because I was a freshman in college when it came out. I was crying in the movie theater. I was laughing so hard at it. And it's a good memory. And it became a staple in the DVD collection that we all amassed in the early 2000s as far as college students and high school students go. And so now we get into our confessions.
Let's do it.
Confessions.
All right. We're in the Buffer Confessional. This is the safe space where it's okay, ladies and gentlemen, to admit when you haven't seen a popular movie or a popular TV show or a reality show. You may have even found yourself at work or with family or friends, and they bring up insert popular piece of pop culture, and you're just playing along, or perhaps you've even lied about having seen it. I'm going to start with, and I'm okay to admit this because we're in the Buffer Confessional and we're in the trust tree. But I, ladies and gentlemen, I have lied on more than one occasion. I have never seen in its entirety Pulp Fiction.
And you've told me this before, and it shocks me still to this day that you've never seen it.
And I feel like when a lot of it, I think, is when it came out, right? It comes out in 94. I'm 11 years old.
Yeah, so, you shouldn't see it when you're 11.
No. And thank God my dad didn't take us to that one. But you figure, okay, so if I'm 11 in 94, Pulp Fiction comes out, I'm probably aware of it by the time I'm maybe 12 or 13. But then when am I going to see it? Am I going to be able to rent it at 13, 14, 15? I don't know. So it's just kind of one of those movies that I don't want to say I missed it, because there's people that are probably going to freak out about how can you miss a movie like Pulp Fiction. But I've seen pieces of it. And by that, I mean the clips that are kind of in pop culture. But I have not seen Pulp Fiction in its entirety.
It was the first time I learned what a gimp suit was from Pulp Fiction. And I still don't know that I still know what a gimp suit is, and I'm okay. I'm okay with that. Just
I don't even know what that means. That's how much I haven't seen Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it comes up at the end. We'll just put it that way.
Like, I think I want a Royale with cheese. That happens in Pulp Fiction.
That is true.
I couldn't tell you the names of the characters. It's Sam Jackson and John Travolta. Yep. And
you've heard me say this,
by Quentin Tarantino.
You've heard me say this before, that I put it on the one of the most overrated movies of all time, and I don't care for it. And I remember saying that at the radio station with our old pal Travis, who used to be the manager at the Palms 10, and he said that I was crazy, and that, I mean, it's one of the best movies ever made. And that's what people in college in my film classes couldn't believe. And I was just like, I wasn't trying to be a hot take jockey. I just don't think it's that good of a movie. But I do think you should take some time sometime if you have it.
Well, and listen, I think the benefit of doing the Buffer podcast on a consistent basis is I have, you know, I did watch Beverly Hills Cop after having admitted to not seeing it. So I will try and get Pulp Fiction on the docket. But in the meanwhile, it's okay to admit things you haven't seen, because we're in the safe space, everybody. Safe.
Absolutely. And there's no judgment coming from my end. And Pulp Fiction, obviously a tour de force, was very prevalent at the Academy Awards back in, was it 1997, 1996? I don't have it in front of me.
94 it came out, 94, I reckon, right?
Okay. So it was in the 95 Academy Awards, which was like the best year for Best Picture ever. I think it was Quiz Show, Pulp Fiction, Shawshank, and Forrest Gump were your finalists for Best Picture.
Wow.
And to this day, I will say that it's a travesty that Shawshank did not win Best Picture over Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump, fine movie.
Forrest Gump, Four Weddings, Pulp Fiction, Quiz Show, Shawshank. You're right. Yep.
Yeah, I always forget about Four Weddings and a Funeral. Probably because that's probably one that I could confess on a later episode, but we won't talk about that right now in case I need it.
These are our confessions.
Talking about Academy Award winning and nominated movies, since they are, the Academy Awards are this weekend, and we'll get in our close up, I'll get your predictions on Best Picture to see what you think is going to win. But this is a movie that I believe won Best Picture in 2001. I'll have to look it up. Million Dollar Baby, the Hillary Swank, Clint Eastwood, Morgan Freeman. I'm told juggernaut of a film. Never seen it. Just haven't ever seen it.
So, and that is surprising, because it's really good. And I know that the same can be said about Pulp Fiction, right? It's really good. Million Dollar Baby has one of those endings that you may have heard.
I know how it ends. I know what happens.
But I saw this in the theaters, and it's one of those movies that, like, even if the whole theater knew what was going to happen, when it happens, it's just still and it's silent and it's a shared experience and it gets quiet. And it's one of the reasons why you love going to the movies. And I will say, Clint Eastwood as a director, man, the guy's got an eye and he rarely misses. And now that being said, Million Dollar Baby is not a movie that I have seen. I may have seen it twice total. You know, when it came out in 2004, I was in college, so I would have seen it in college. I remember when it was released on, you know, DVD for rental, but it's just kind of one of those really heavy movies that it's like this. And I know it's not the same thing, but you just mentioned Forrest Gump, right? I have Forrest Gump on DVD, and I can tell you this. I've watched it zero times because I saw Forrest Gump at a young age. 94 would have been 11. It was very emotional. I've seen it other times. It's still a very, very heavy movie, and I just could never bring myself to watch it. That's kind of how I would feel about Million Dollar Baby. But that being said, it's really good.
Yeah, I should probably see it.
Really good.
I think it was like, so I looked it up. It came out in 2004, like you just said, and I looked up the kind of the timeline as to when it came out. About 2 weeks before it came out, I got hired as a student assistant football coach at Morningside College. So my life was all about impressing these coaches because I was trying to become a college football coach. And I think that I just went into like tunnel vision. My wife was student teaching. We were engaged. She was student teaching. She was getting ready to graduate. She was going to find her first teaching job. So like every social moment was super stressful because we all were changing our lives. Like we were at that, we're getting ready to leave college mode of our life. And so I think that the thought of going and watching something super heavy in the movie theater on a date night was probably just not what we were wanting to do at that particular time. Just looking at the time of life that I was in. So that's why I probably missed it in the theater and then just never have gone back to visit it.
And I don't know if it's a fair comparison. And before I make this comparison, I just want to say Million Dollar Baby did win at the Academy Awards Best Picture, Best Director for Clint Eastwood, Best Actress for Hilary Swank, who is amazing in it, and Best Supporting Actor for Morgan Freeman. It's not a fair comparison, but when you talk about those movie theater experiences when the whole theater is quiet or still, how about
you can American say this is us? Oh, I think
I'm going to say American Sniper. Because that also has one of those endings. And there's other examples as well. I mean, some people would tell you that Infinity War and the old snap your fingers, do your steps when Thanos wipes out half the population. But I would argue that a little bit more poignant would be in like a Million Dollar Baby. But when I think about movies like that, that's why I love going to the theaters, because you have that shared experience. And for every heavy movie, you can have your 22 Jump Street and your Fast and the Furious 9, 10, 11, 12, where you're just going to go suspend disbelief. Listen, at this point, I'm going to go see it and enjoy it. I think those, you know, that's what you do, right? That's a movie where you can totally unplug, forget about the pandemic, and go have a good time. And then for every fun movie, you can put on a thinker or the emotional heartstring puller, and that's what you're going to get with Million Dollar Baby. So I do hope that you'll step into the ring with Million Dollar Baby, and knowing you, you might not leave the ring with a dry eye.
Oh yeah, I'm fully prepared. Like, you're talking to the guy who, I think I've talked about it before. Like, the movie Gladiator is my favorite movie of all time, and I bawl like a baby every single time. No, every beat that's coming from it, you know, it's the, but everything about that movie to me is the perfect movie. Same with, I don't know if you ever saw this movie, but Kingdom of Heaven. It's another Ridley Scott movie with Orlando Bloom. It's kind of pre-Crusades. Yep. The moment where like he's knighting other people to fight, like that just gets my juice flowing. So I'm pretty sure that I will like this movie, knowing the affinity I have for sports. And I know it's not a sports movie per se. I know it's a movie that operates in the realm of sports. So I definitely will try to find a time to see it. But I just was looking at past Best Picture winners to kind of prepare for this. And I was like, oh, man, that's the one. That's, I think, the only one from the 2000s that I've never seen is Million Dollar Baby. So I thought it was a good pick for my confession.
Well, it's definitely worth checking out. And I know that you will, because it's just that good. All right. One of the last things that we do on this show that I think is going to quickly become a fan favorite is the dress socks and Crocs. And these are just parenting and life, wins and losses, ridiculous moments, sentimental moments. And as we're sitting here doing the show right now, I'm having one of those moments because everyone in my house is asleep except my daughter, Lucy, who is awake, and I am neglecting her because we're doing the podcast. My wife is asleep because the aforementioned daughter woke up 6 times last night. And I did my wife a favor when she went to bed. I kind of flipped the lock. So Lucy's just upstairs right now and she's probably waiting for me. So I this is a great live time example of she's fine. She's safe. She's sleep regressing. I don't know why. But we're going to get her taken care of. And it's just another one of those moments. And I'll also tell you that my Crocs are feeling even better.
Slap it, tap it, wait.
Dress socks and Crocs.
So I love my Crocs. I've looked at getting another pair. Whether that's good or not, I don't know.
Yes.
How many pairs of Crocs did I think I would own in my life? 0. I currently have 1 pair, but they're really comfortable. And I'm listening to Lucy walking upstairs right now. I'm going to turn it over to you, Joe.
I'm sitting at 0 pairs of Crocs that I own. And yeah, we'll wrap this up. I would love to be able to fit into a pair of Crocs right now because my right foot still looks like a butternut squash, I think, is probably the best analogy as far as the size and the shape of it after being traumatized last week by having a 20-pound.
You look like Miss Piggy in sandals, right?
Oh, it's brutal. And
you got a big old foot.
Yeah, and it's
what happened.
Bucket of baseballs on the team I coach. player was trying to help, you know, load up equipment, and he bit off more than he could chew, and unfortunately my New Balance clad shoe was right underneath the bucket that he dropped it, and it landed just right where it kind of the edge of the bucket hit right at the knuckle of my big toe. And it just felt like I stubbed my toe. And then the next day was sore, but I iced it, you know, ibuprofen, yada, 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 elevated, not as much as I should have. Friday was still sore, but then Saturday I woke up and, like, I kid you not, I tried to step and it just a shooting pain. And I looked down and there's old squash foot just getting ready to try to walk to go take the dog out. So thankfully because of, you know, the sports that I've played and being the son of a physical therapist, I own a walking boot. So I just slapped on the walking boot and kind of went throughout my day and cleaned my garage, walked my dog the way I normally do. And it just progressively has gotten worse and worse, and finally got to go get it x-rayed. And while it is not technically a fracture, I have what is called a deep bone bruise and a stress reaction. Which basically means the inside of my bone is throbbing to the point where if I don't protect it, it will just break from the inside out, is how the doctor explained it to me. So still in a walking boot.
The takeaway is getting old sucks.
Yeah,
I don't know how
else
to say it.
And like just dropping a bucket 6 inches, you know, ruins my life for 2 to 4 weeks.
It's terrible. I mean, all of last week up until Friday, my left hip was out of place.
Oh, maybe we can talk like that.
I don't know all the terminology. My chiropractor took care of me, but I just thought, like, this is what happens. And then like half of this week, like my neck was kind of out. And then I mentioned the kid that's not sleeping well. So then you just feel like a zombie. One of the days this week, I wasn't going to take a lunch break. I took a lunch break and I just slept for an hour. And I thought, like, and the thing is, like, yes, I could stand to lose some weight and it probably makes things better. But I also think it's just the age. It's like, you know, the clock is the clock's heading in one direction and it's not getting any younger, right? And yeah. and all these body parts aren't getting any newer, right? And
well, maybe and the, for me, they'll be getting newer because I think I'm working my way towards that total knee replacement, total hip.
I just feel like it's just part of getting older, and the recovery time is what has really surprised me the most. And that goes for anything, whether it's a night of, you know, interrupted sleep or a night out too long or getting a bucket of balls dropped on the foot. We just don't bounce back as quickly as we once did. And it's the reality, right? It's not, I'm not being a Debbie Downer. I'm just saying, like, this is dress socks and Crocs to a T. And I wonder if you were wearing Crocs, if the bucket of balls would have just bounced off of it.
Probably. I think there's a good probability that it would have protected me a little bit better. So that's really the lesson, and no free ads, but Crocs may be the way of the future for this almost 40-year-old to not just be waterproof and antimicrobial, but to be able to to resist a drop from 6 inches of a 20-pound.
I love it.
Bucket of balls.
All right, well, listen, everybody, thank you for tuning into the Buffer Podcast. We appreciate it. Make sure you rate and review and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Pull up the Buffer on anchor.fm, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and we're working hard each week to put out a show that we think you'll enjoy. And who knows, maybe Mortal Kombat shows up next week. I don't know if I could do two action movies in a row.
I think
I may next need week, to cleanse the palate.
Next week we get to pick the winner for April because we've got our four pieces of content, and we might have a special guest next week to present why he thinks Pacific Rim is such a great movie, and
nice
for me to say it's not. So we'll just, that's the tease. I may get in a significant argument with a person that is going to be my wife's boss next year. So maybe I need to be careful.
What could go wrong? Well, you'll find out who Joel is going to lose as a friend next week on The Buffer.
See ya.
Thanks for listening, everybody.